What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm Daniel Shoptaw, C70 on Twitter. You'll find me writing at C70 at the Bat at the Cardinal Conclave. With me, as per regular, as of late, Alan Medlock, who writes at the Redbird Daily. You'll find him at amedlock1. Before we get into it, do want to encourage everybody to go rate and review us over at iTunes or wherever you may be listening to this. It would not hurt for us to get our name out there a little bit more, if you don't mind. Share it with your friends, all that kind of stuff. And definitely send us comments and feedback on what you think the show is going to be. Hit us up on Twitter, because we tend to look at that. But email, you can always email me at cardinal70@gmail.com. I'll share it with Alan. Do all that for us, if you don't mind. If you want to pause and do that now, that's great. If not, at the end of whatever length this show may be, which is always probably longer than it should be, whenever, go ahead and head on over and give us what you think of us, whatever it may be. Alan, we're going to talk a lot about a lot of different things. Before we get into the rewind, though, general thoughts: this has been kind of another wet week for the Cardinals, but in a kind of a mixed results week too.
Yeah, didn't seem to really get in any rhythm, but it kind of surprised you that even without getting in a rhythm, they didn't look to play. The level of play didn't seem much different than what we would have with a week of nice weather. It never really picked up. Never really dropped, kind of played at that 500 clip. Last night's game, you lost 5-4. You had one mistake by Bowman. It was that last night was really the first night outside of that first series where you felt like, you win some, you lose some, let's just get back at it. And you hate that this point in the situation that they're in, we're trying to gain some ground or whatnot. But I still can't really figure them out. I don't know. We're in that first week of May, which I always say Memorial Day is usually the time when you start worrying or start planning on what moves you're going to make to make yourselves better. So I think we're still a ways out from that. But still, the level of play hadn't really picked up and gotten too high. They beat up on some teams and then turn around and kick some games. So I don't know what this week has told us.
Yeah, it's something that we will go ahead and discuss a little bit more in the Redbird Rewind.
McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
So since the last time we met, the Cardinals, they had a game on Sunday that really should have won, up 4-0, and let the Reds come back and take that one, which was a bit painful. They lose two out of three to the Brewers with the rain out of the middle before beating up on the Braves tonight and doing what they should do to an Atlanta team that is struggling. So that much at least is good. It is. I mean, the Cardinals sit at 14-14 right now, and as you were saying, it just doesn't feel like, about the time you think they're turning that corner, they have a game like last night or have a game like Sunday where they just kind of give it away. And you realize that maybe they haven't made as much progress after all.
Sure, and even like not to keep going back to last night as being the Wainwright start, even at 3-0, you didn't feel comfortable. He was just giving up hard contact. You knew they were going to score a couple runs. So when they got back in the game, it does. You don't want to blow another 3-run lead, but it didn't really surprise you much last. It surprised me much yesterday. So it's one of those games that. it's kind of a giveaway, which they just can't afford to have right now. You know, tonight, yes, they did go in and beat up on the Braves. I was glad to see that. But as much as you don't like to see injury, I was glad to see some new blood brought in. You know, I had a feeling the fam was probably going to hit well when he came back up. He's so streaky, and he's hit well all spring in Memphis. So I was kind of glad to see that he kind of picked right back up. And maybe there needs to be a little bit of shuffle, you know, just to just kind of light a fire. You know, Diaz, I'm really liking the shift down in the lineup. It looks like he's walked twice since they moved him. And, you know, he's had back-to-back three-hit nights. That's always a good sign. So, you know, things may be ticking upwards.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see. Like I said, it just feels like about the time, it's that one step forward, one step back type of thing. You know, the Cardinals were kind of lucky tonight that they didn't wind up with a couple more injuries. And I guess we'll find out a little bit later on. It seems like Jed Jerko and Tommy Pham, you know, survived their outing, but... You know, especially with Jerko taking that line shot off his hand, it may be one of those things that after the moment passes and the adrenaline wears off, that's becomes a problem. Hopefully not. Maybe it wasn't as bad as we thought. But, you know, go ahead.
I thought Edmonds had a good point about those things last night. He was like, hey, during the game, a lot of times you don't feel them. He said the next morning when you wake up is when you kind of determine how bad it actually was. So yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head on that.
Yeah. Let's go back to that, Adam. Let's talk about Wainwright again. And I feel like we've done this a number of times this year, but until there's some resolution to Wainwright one way or the other, I feel like it's going to be a topic that we continue to discuss. You know, Wainwright's sitting with an ERA over 6. Again, last night, he did not get past the fifth inning. He's only gotten past the fifth once. And then even in that game, it was almost a stretch because it was the second game of a doubleheader, and I don't think Mike Matheny had any urge to go to the bullpen again. He could have easily pulled him after 5 there. You know, and although a lot of his peripherals, his extra stuff, his FIP, his, you know, his batting average of balls of play, things like that indicate that he's having some bad luck, that he's pitching better than his ERA and things stand. But, you know, there comes a point where you start wondering, you know, well, like the, you know, BABIP is 400 and something, but it feels like that's earned. I mean, it doesn't feel like he's getting fluke hits dropping in here and there. You know, people are putting some hard contact on him. It may just going to be that it's going to be high this year because he doesn't seem to be fooling anybody. Like you said, you give him a 3-run lead and he turn around and in that next inning, I mean, he doesn't get 3 outs before those 3 runs are gone. And that's gotta be disheartening for a team to put up some runs, especially the team like now who's struggled somewhat, only to see it immediately given back away.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one of those, you expect for him to give up a couple runs. You know, it's not going to be perfect. You know, he's probably your 5 at this point, just to battle. But after all the starting, they've gotten everybody else has pitched so well to have that one fifth day where they're kicking games and, you know, you're battling the whole time is a little disheartening, especially he's kind of your emotional leader. So I don't know really what can be done, but yeah, you're right. It's, the hard contact says it all. He gives up a lot of it and, I hope that it marginalizes and it gets a little bit better, but it's kind of a scary time right now. And that with that spot with Wainwright, because I just don't know what moves could actually be made.
Yeah, and, you know, our friend Scott, Texas Card Fan, it wasn't a question directly for us here at the show, but I thought it was something to be worth talking about, is he asked about what does this mean for Lance Lynn? You know, because I think we kind of went into the season saying Lance Lynn is not going to be a part of the Cardinals after this year, that the Cardinals have, you know, all these spots locked up. They're going to have Alex Reyes coming back next year. They've got arms coming. You know, they're just not really a good spot for Lynn. But if you don't have Adam Wainwright for next year, and that's, I mean, right now it becomes very hard to count on him to pitch well next year to the point that you may have to start thinking about the bullpen soon if he's going to stick around. I mean, does that make it more, I don't know, necessary that the Cardinals go out and lock down a guy like Lynn, a guy that's a workhorse, that's pretty reliable, instead of, you know, worried about Alex Reyes' return, worried about some of these young guys? Or Or should they just save the money, deal with the pitching that they've got, and then maybe put that toward the big free agents that are coming up?
Yeah, I'm selfish on this because I really wish that they would make a deal. And I honestly think that that may pick up steam here by the end of the month and no later than the break. I think if he makes it to the open market, they're in trouble. But if they can lock him up beforehand and may even pay over slot for him, I could live with that. And just because, one, you know what you're going to get. You know what you're going to get out of him. He turns 30 this year. If you can lock him up for maybe 2-3 years, I think that's a win-win. We're always going to hear complaints on both sides of it. You know, the Cards are going to have to overpay in those situations with some guys, I think. They know what they've got in them. I think there needs to be some certainty. I understand the kids in Springfield right now are coming quick. I understand you still have Marco Gonzalez somewhere, but the word on him last year was he's long for the bullpen whenever he's healthy. They think he can be a weapon out of there. So I really don't know what's immediate, and I don't think that I don't think you can count on the kind of season that Lynn's having right now out of Alex Reyes next year. You know, I think there's going to be a work in progress. I think that almost sets back a year of his maturation. So I would be all for them signing Lynn. I like what he brings to the what he brings to the clubhouse. I love the attitude he brings to the field. I know they touched on it a little bit in the broadcast tonight. I thought they missed that last year. I really thought they were kind of deadpan without Lackey. And I think Lynn kind of brings some of that. And I'm all for going and signing him. You never know what's going on. They always seem to – I'm a big believer in the front office, but I would be all for going and signing him.
Yeah, I mean, there's a strong case for it. I will say, though, I know that earlier in the year, I think it was Zach Gifford had tweeted out, he'd done some, you know, done the calculation of the payroll matrix and looking at, you know, what the Cardinals might have available for Manny Machado or whatever the case may be. And it was kind of getting a little tight when you start thinking about the fact that, you know, I mean, yeah, there's room now, but if you start looking for a $35 million a year player, and that, I don't know if Machado is going to go for that, but I think you kind of start estimating something like that.
Sure, I would think so.
Yeah, then it's getting to the, you know, the probably higher or more than they really are going to max out, and they, you know, especially when you start thinking about luxury taxes and things of that nature. So, and that then, of course, doesn't factor in a Lynn extension. So, if it's going to be Lynn or Machado, and I mean, again, that's a very stark choice. It probably doesn't come down to that, but, you know.
I see what you're saying, though. You know, so. I mean, not even like a Machado type name, because I think you and I both have targeted him as a player that we think the Cardinals have targeted, you mm-hmm. know, whenever he hits the market. I see what you're saying as far as, and what Zach was saying as far as Lynn now or superstar later. That's a tough one. I agree that it's tough to say. You know, sometimes to me, though, I hate playing with the finances. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Cardinals are one of those teams that can get what they want. Now, I know they don't need to spend money because they have it, but, you know, it's tough to say. So, yeah, it would be nice to have that superstar because I think that's one thing they are lacking.
Yeah, and I mean, but on the flip side of that, if you get the superstar but you have a rotation that's very inexperienced, you know, how, you know, are you going to be able to be successful there? Maybe you will, because I mean, you'd have Carlos Martinez locked up, you'd have Alex Reyes who would be a year plus back from injury. You know, who knows what you have out of Monica Waka, and then some of these other guys that are coming up, especially when you put them as fourth or fifth starters, you're looking pretty well. But, you know, again, having Lance Lynn in that rotation to be your number two or your number three, depending on how Reyes is going, you know, that's going to give you a lot of chances to win as well. So I think it's becoming a little tougher. It's kind of like with the situations we saw with Jaime Garcia over the last couple of years. You know, that 2 years ago, you know, everybody was just sure that option was not going to be picked up when spring training rolled around, and Garcia pitched well enough that they went ahead and picked it up. So, I mean, it could be that, you know, Lynn does the same thing, that he pitches well enough that the Cardinals realize that they can't get by without him. Now, again, it just is really going to boil down to whatever the club wants to or thinks they can do with Adam Wainwright. Because if Adam Wainwright's going to be a starter next year, you really just don't have the room for him. And I know, you know, it right now seems to be very difficult, though, to picture Adam Wainwright as a starter for... Actually, it's starting to become harder to picture it for the rest of 2017, but it definitely doesn't seem like that's the place that Adam Wainwright's going to be in 2018.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's that's the painful part of it. It just kind of sucks in this situation because I don't think anybody has faith in that fifth day now whenever he rolls around. I would think another wild card on the Steelers, Walker, to where, yes, he's pitched very well, but now we've kind of seen some of the chinks in the armor. And you just wonder, you know, you and I have both said this several times that we think he's on borrowed time, you know, until something goes out again. I'm bullish on Waka just because, you know, just kind of like a bunch of people are on Wainwright. He's just so fun to watch, and he's brought a lot of good memories. But, you know, that could be another hole if he were to falter here, you know, down the stretch or, you know, by the midway point in the season. So that may play a factor in it too. But yeah, you're right. The Wainwright deal is frustrating. I know a bunch of, you know, on Twitter, you see a bunch of guys calling for maybe some bullpen time and whatnot. And, you know, it kind of goes back to that situation. The Cardinals just don't embarrass their guys. Mm-hmm. So you just wonder. I'm real curious to see how this end game is.
Yeah, I mean, because if there was ever a Matheny guy, Adam Wainwright's a Matheny guy.
Oh, yeah,
And yes, Adam Wainwright has earned he's earned the right to end his career or to be, you know, to get plenty of chances. But that said, I mean, eventually the team does have to come first. And, you know, on the flip side of that, I don't know that Adam Wainwright's any better out of the bullpen, honestly. It's not that he's... you know, making it three innings and then blowing up in the fourth. And so you say, okay, if we can just pitch him a couple innings, he's fine. You know, he could blow up in the first. He could blow up in the third. I mean, it just happens. And as we've seen, you know, long men in the bullpen don't work out very well.
yes.
They wind up sitting for a week or so.
Well, yes, without a doubt.
So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing to do. We did see good performance out of Carlos Martinez this week, obviously because he cut his hair. You know, I can't imagine what else it would have been. No, I mean he did pitch a very, very solid game, and I think that helped a lot of people because I think there was a lot of people and some, you know, that were getting concerned. I mean, that's a big contract that they signed him to, and granted, even if he struggled all of this year, that doesn't mean the contract's a bad idea, but. You know, after seeing what he could do on opening night, you really wanted to see that more often. And, you know, he hadn't done it since then. So, I mean, hopefully we're not going to get just one good start a month. But hopefully he's back on the right track.
Yeah, I agree. He's Carlos is going to be one of those pitchers through just due to attitude, fun-loving, probably some other factors that I don't know how comfortable I am touching on this. He's not going to get the benefit of the doubt very often. And I think he's a stud. I think he's a superstar in the making. And I thought his stuff was good. You know, he almost had too much movement, you know, and there in those starts that were bad. So I'm glad to see him kind of rein it back. I never really worried about him too much. I could see where there's a faction that did after he signed that was worried about that. I think a lot of that has to do with Hrabowski and then his body language. There was a start in New York where – disinterested was the word, and I think that's probably the lack of a better term. I don't think that was the case, that he didn't want to be out there. But yeah, there were some worrisome issues to where, hey, I don't have anything. I'm going to rear back though as hard as I can. You know, I felt like there was a little bit of that kind of attitude in the start. But I think that, I think he'll be fine, and there's probably going to be bumps along the way. He's come a long way from where we started with him. So we'll see how it goes, and I'm pretty confident in those at least three of the four top four of that rotation, and I'm fairly confident in Wainwright throwing up a good start every third or fourth start. Now I don't know if there's room for that. You know, that's the problem. If they were playing at a 600 clip, would be a heck of a lot different. Yeah. So
yeah, if they only lost Adam Wainwright games, then that'd be all right. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. And I think that's an interesting, like I said, it's a very difficult situation because Adam Wainwright's kind of that immovable force, you know, unless he feels like it's time to retire, which he doesn't ever seem to indicate that it is. I mean, he continues to say he's going to work on it, continues to say he's making, and, you know, there's only so much I think he can do. And there are going to be nights where he comes out and still has it. I mean, I think that we saw that, you know, against the Blue Jays. I mean, it wasn't vintage Wainwright, but it was closer. You know, he only had a bad fifth inning. And so, you know, there is possibilities. There are times and that he's going to be fine. But like you said, it's just not going to be not as often as we can feel comfortable with. So,
sure. I hold out hope on Wainwright just because if you remember in 15, whenever the Giants eliminated, that would have been 14 or 15.
14.
That was the walk-off homer.
Yeah,
the walk-off, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Because 15, he would have been out all year. My nut, you know.
Well, and that's the year they lost the Cubs.
Okay. And then, when he came back late after the Achilles. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was, if you remember, he was really bad in the playoffs in 14, really bad, to where they were considering, well, at least the media and everybody that we hear from, they were considering making an adjustment on the starting role and thought Walker may get one of those starts. Well, that game, that elimination game in San Francisco, he went 7 strong. Yeah. I'm just wondering if he doesn't have that somewhere where we're going to start seeing that, not 7 strong, but lasting later than the fifth and battling and keeping you in the ballgame.
I hope so. He's got a veteran's mentality. He's a stubborn guy. I will say that. I mean, he's going to work, do everything he can to be effective for this team. And so some nights he may do it. I'm getting to where it doesn't feel like he can do it consistently, and that's the issue. So
I feel the same way.
Before we get into the injuries, let's talk about probably the other thing that sparked enough controversy or enough discussion this week. You know, Colton Wong has always been a lightning rod, but has always seemed to be a guy that's never earned the trust of his manager. But I think we may be able to put that to bed. We saw that Colton, you know, had a rough night against the Brewers on Monday night. Got picked up, not picked off, double off third, which that's, you know, you could debate how much of that was his fault,
mm-hmm.
how much of that was Maloney's fault, how much of that was wet grass. But then made the error that allowed the winning run to score. You know, I think in the past, Mike Matheny might have thrown him under the bus a little bit, or at least not been as positive as he was. Matheny came out and said, hey, he's been playing well, which he has been. I mean, he's hitting like over, he's now one of the few guys hitting over 300 for the season, but he's really been on a tear of late. He's been playing well. These games happen. You know, I talked to him. We're good. You know, that kind of stuff. And Colton said, yeah, we're good, and I'm just going to put it behind me. And the next night he came out and I think drove in the winning run and played well and has played every night since then. Whereas in the past, it feels like that's a thing that Matheny would have benched him for. Is there growth in this relationship that we're seeing here?
Yeah, I think so. Earlier this year, it seemed like the pressure valve had been released on Wong a little bit. And you could see he was really playing free. And this, like I said, I always preface this by saying this isn't going to be the most popular among our listeners. I think Matheny's grown up a little bit. Now, tactically, he does some bonehead things. But I've noticed that he's let the leash out a little bit. And perfect example was that same lineup when they were playing well that he kept it. He didn't adjust anything. He didn't want to force a spark. He's kind of coming into his own just to let things happen. I think that's going to help defensively as well. And I think they're going to start clicking offensively. And I think it shows his growth as a manager, which I think we needed to see. I don't know what that spark was. I don't know if it was the coming back home and getting chewed or however the Mozeliak conversation went. But they seem to they seem to be on the same page more than anything. And I think that I hope we're seeing that Wong that we wanted to see. You know, his rise through the minors, the ability that he brings, and taking walks and doing the things that he's doing now and playing well defensively. It looks like there may have been growth on both sides, and it looks like he may be turning into more of a leader than that guy that always seemed to get, things ran downhill. So I hope that we see a lot more of this.
Yeah, it does feel like, as some have noted on Twitter, it feels like ever since that return from New York and whatever kind of meeting that Mosellock and Matheny had, things have been better. Like you said, the lineup has been more structured. The Matt Adams has not played in the outfield. Matt Adams hasn't played much at all, but he definitely hasn't played in the outfield to the point that we saw Alamedes Diaz play the outfield last night. So Matt Adams wouldn't have to. And things like the Wong situation, Wong's been playing, and there's just a lot of things that it kind of make you feel better about this team. And then, to be fair, I mean, this is the time since they came back they've been winning. I mean, they're 500 team right now, but they were, what, six games under at that time. So, they've been putting things together, which always helps as well. I think Matheny, I mean, there's been times... You know, I think Matheny's grown overall anyway, but it does feel like there's been some sort of shift this time around. It was interesting. I was just now getting, I read my baseball prospectus annual from the front to the back, so I always get to the Cardinals late. And so I'm actually just now getting to them, I had a point. Will Leach was talking about Matheny and how much, issues that there are there, and man, I hate it when I start a sentence and I can't remember what my point was. I really don't, but anyway, I think there's growth there, and we'll see how much more there is. Oh, I know what it was the fact that he pointed out that Matheny's actually the fourth longest tenured manager in the National League. That, we keep thinking of him as a new guy, but he's really becoming a veteran to this. And not always does he act like it. Not always do we see the results that we want out of a veteran. He's getting there. And so I do think he's growing some. I think there's still a ways to go, but we'll see how that goes from there. All right, let's talk about these injuries then. Last night, Stephen Piscotty leaves with a hamstring issue, and Dexter Fowler leaves with a shoulder issue. Piscotty goes on the disabled list today, with Tommy Pham being called up. Fowler is apparently not as bad, even though we had heard during the day, Derek Gould had said on a radio show that the Cardinals thought Fowler's could be much more severe than Piscotty's. They did not put Fowler on the disabled list. He was apparently available to hit tonight. Did not. 10-0 will do that for you. Let's talk about Piscotty first. It feels to me that if this was still a 15-day DL, they probably wouldn't have put him on the disabled list. But 10 days, it seemed smart enough to go ahead and get Pham up here.
Sure, and that's it's a good reason to maybe get his bat in there. You never want to. You never want to put a guy down with injury, and it's obviously something happened. And those hamstrings could be rough, and Edmonds was right. Those conditions aren't the best. As cold as it was after setting the day beforehand to get out to force to play and to play basically 6 hours later than you were expecting to, it can be rough on the body, and he said you couldn't fully get stretched. So I can understand that. It's easy to DL a guy when you have a guy behind you and Pham, what he was doing in Memphis, and they're just like, hey, let's not take a chance. I almost wish they would have had and DL'd Fowler as well, especially if he can't throw 2 to 3 days. That was my biggest issue. I know that I was talking to you all day about it, and I was really hitting my refresh button a lot. I mean, almost like it was I said this on my timeline. I was hitting it today as much as I normally would during the trade deadline and during the winter meetings to make sure I didn't miss anything, because I was really curious to see how this played out. His was the more worrisome injury to me, because he went down and it looked relatively harmless. A lot of those shoulder injuries do. I've seen a bunch. I that I work in surgery. I don't know if everybody else does. And so I specialize in sports medicine for 6 years. So I've seen a bunch of these. They're all athletic guys. The elderly, they don't get a lot of the shoulders fixed. The youth, you don't, until a certain age limit, you don't, because you don't see them a whole lot. So all these are innocent injuries and can turn to be very, very bad. I was glad to see him back. I was glad to see. I thought there should be a 10-day just. I don't think it hurts to put him on the DL at this point. This time of the year, you can find somebody. You can find a bats for somebody. I know he's your leadoff guy. You know, I get it. But I hate the coming back to hit only and can't throw for 3 days, especially with a short bench. That's the worrisome part about now. I worry that the shoulder may linger all year because generally these things just don't go away. It didn't say there wasn't any structural damage, but it all that the MRI came back that Fowler said was nothing too worrisome. And you're just like, well, that can mean a lot of different things. So I'd hope that this just doesn't blow up and we do see a longer DL stint down the line. Then now there is times where you can't do much worse to it. If you can fight through the pain, you're going to be okay. He doesn't have, you know, 25, 30 assists every year. So, you know, you can, if you can live with performance now and he can play through the pain, even if it is bad, you could do it. So, I don't know. The shoulders are always so worrisome to me. And I thought maybe a 10-day DL would make sense at this point with a short bench if he can't throw for 3 days. So I'm really curious to see how this plays out. I wouldn't be surprised if he plays in the next day or two. One of the reasons I said that was I really thought if they thought it was going to be extended, I figured tonight would be the night that they start Carpenter leading off again. Mm-hmm. With it being what could be short-term, I'm glad they used Wong at the top of the lineup. So you can look at that two ways. Is Wong temporary and they're going to move him back down? Or is this one, are they going to give him an extended look? I don't know. I think this road trip's going to be telling on Fowler. I don't think we're out of the woods yet.
No, I mean, these injuries do tend to have a way of, you know, flaring up, especially at times you don't want them to. You do wonder if, you know, this is a guy that the Cardinals brought in. He's the face of the offseason, at least, a big contract. And so there's two ways thinking about it. It's one, that they don't want him to be, you know, disabled, out for a length of time. People start wondering about that contract. But on the other side of that is you'd like to protect your investment. I mean, you've got him signed for 5 years. You don't want him to do anything that would aggravate and make him lost for any more period of time. So I'm sure that's something they're monitoring. I'm sure that as the days go on, we may hear a little bit more about that. But you're right. I mean, we've so often seen them, you know, little nagging injuries, rest and rehab, this kind of thing, and it doesn't work. The player battles through these injuries, but he's hitting terrible, and then eventually winds up on the disabled list anyway. If there was any indication that was the case, you know, we should have probably seen Fowler go to the DL. But, you know, again, they know more about this stuff than we do. I mean, they know more, at least, about these specific situations. And if they don't think he needs a DL, then hopefully he's fine. But you're right. It's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on.
Yeah, if it's any comfort, you know, Ozzie played basically with a torn rotator cuff his entire career. You know, and he threw a heck of a lot more than Fowler did. So it can be done. You know, there are some severities to where, you know, sleep patterns are a big part of cuff injuries because most of the time from movement, they don't let you sleep at all. So that could be a telling factor. So, yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I worried all my buddies and you today that, hey, this could be a bigger deal than what they're letting on.
Well, it's just fair. I mean, it's Cardinals and injuries. We tend to you know,
exactly. They never get the benefit of the doubt from us. You know how we were talking about Carlos Martinez earlier. I don't know if the medical staff never does. I'll never deadpan or badmouth somebody that's much better in that profession than I am. But the what we know and what we've seen is worrisome.
Yeah, and it's. I mean, to be fair, it's not always their fault. And you know, some of the medical rules don't allow them to give the information out that would help us make better decisions, make decisions to judge on how good their decisions are, I guess. But yeah, it is a little bit of an issue. Now, we did have a question from Ben Adams, who's the P-Vine on Twitter, who asked, how big of an effect are last night's injuries going to be in the short term, and who gets called up as a result? Now, obviously, we know Pham has gotten called up, which was the obvious choice anyway, the way he was hitting in Memphis and the fact that, you know, he has the major league experience on the 25 man roster. You know, if they have to disable Fowler, I know here in a little while we're going to hear from Kyle Reese in their minors report, and he and I talked about this last night, he has a suggestion about what they should do if they needed two bodies. If you were going if they need somebody else for Fowler, which way do you think they go?
I would personally like to see either Bader or Garcia. And I say that just because I always look at these as these injuries as opportunities for other players. And I look at it as an opportunity to, hey, let's maybe turn over this clubhouse a little bit and let's kind of let's stir the pot. Let's try to light a fire. I think that you can use those to your advantage. I thought La Russa was great about that, to where he would, you know, you'd have those extended injuries and a guy would come up and start playing right away. I think the next man up, I think that started with La Russa to me, because I thought he pushed the right buttons on all of those. So I would like to see Bader, and just because we've heard about him so long now, hitting like he has on all these prospect lists, and we've seen it. I thought he was knocking on the door last year to a call, but I wondered if he just can't dip his toes in the water a little bit now. The Garcia is interesting to me, is just because I love the Cuban players, and I know he can fly. And I just wonder if that's not one of those deals that they bring in to really spark things. So that's kind of how I would that's how I would kind of look at it and kind of hope they would do it and maybe give one of those guys an opportunity to see if, hey, this could be short term, but they take off and they make the decision, send them back down, difficult. That's kind of, I mean, that's maybe wishful thinking and super optimistic thinking on my part for an injured guy, but I don't know. I just like to see, you know, that new element added in.
Yeah, Bader's hitting .261, 4 homers, 7 RBI down in Memphis. You know, it wouldn't be unheard of to get him up. You know, you could, you know, even...
Especially, and so it's not to step on you, especially if it's going to go kind of on your theory of he may not be here in August.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you run the risk of him not doing well and hurting his trade value. But you do also have the flip side of that. If he does well, then you can market him as a guy that can hit major league pitching. And yeah, I mean, that's my feeling, is when you look at this outfield and you see Grichuk and Piscotty and Fowler for the most part, and guys like Garcia and Sierra and others, you know, coming up, I feel like Bader's a very good trade chip if you're going to do that, and it's somebody that you'd like to have, but I think you could afford to lose. So, you know, any major league experience, you know, could help the case there. So, but I don't know, you know, again, short term, you know, there are differences. I mean, if Fowler and Scotty were going to be out for a long term, then yeah, you probably see these guys. It's kind of like, you know, if Yadier Molina goes on the 10-day, you know, maybe you don't see Carson Kelly if it's only a 10 days, but if it's a month, then you probably do. That kind of thing. So I don't know if they would want to bring up Bader for just, you know, less than 2 weeks. But it's possible that they might. So, yeah, and I'm kind of interested in Garcia as well. He's doing well in Springfield, but that's, you know, that's Double-A. It could be a pretty decent jump for him to do that, but not one that hasn't been done before. So it would be kind of interesting to see. Again, right now it does not look like that's going to be an issue. And Tommy Pham, obviously, you know, off to a good start in the major leagues, doubled and homered in his first two at-bats, just kind of picking up where he was at Memphis. You know that he's, you know, he wanted to do everything he can to try to stay here, and I don't know how that's even possible once Piscotty gets back, but, you know, he's definitely going to try to make it difficult for the club.
Yeah, and then you see Martinez with a big hit tonight as well, or two big hits tonight as well. So that'll be interesting. Pham is fun to watch when he's hot, just because he hits the ball so hard when he hits it. And, you know, he's athletic, but, you know, he's made of glass, too. You know, I think all of us would have, we would have been like, ooh, you know, with any other outfielder that stepped on the warning track during that inning. Yeah. But whenever he did it, you're thinking, this is trouble, you know. So I would love to see him stick around and just stay hot, because, you know, like the year when in 15, when he was getting a lot of outfield at bats, I mean, you know, had that huge division series bomb. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, a lot of hard contact when he makes contact. Yeah, you just hope he can maintain that hot streak over an extended period of time. So, yeah, I hope he makes the decision really hard about what's going to happen, you know, whenever that time comes.
Yep. Other injury-related news, the Cardinals did put Tyler Lyons on the DL this week, not too long after he had taken him off the DL. Apparently a small lat strain. They're hopeful that he's off in 10 days. We'll see. Hopefully that's the case, but, you know, lat strains,
mm-hmm.
you know, bleak, that kind of stuff is always kind of scary. Also, as they announced when Piscotty went on the disabled list, Johnny Peralta has started a rehab assignment. Tonight was his first night down at Single A, I believe, and I don't think it necessarily started off well, but, you know, there's a lot of talk. In fact, we've got a question we'll go ahead and tackle here from Jeff White, Jeff B. Goofy on Twitter, asking how Cardinals will go about disposing of Johnny. You know, I maybe I'm buying into this story that I shouldn't be, but, you know, Peralta didn't look terrible in spring. And if they're saying, you know, his medicine, his infection, all this kind of sapped his strength, sapped his, you know, focus, sapped everything that he had, yeah, I could buy that his results would be bad. So, yeah, I'm not saying, I guess I'm trying to say I don't think I've written Peralta off as completely worthless yet. Now, if he doesn't hit in his rehab and he comes up here and has a couple of games where he's not doing much, then maybe that's overblown. But I think right now there's still a chance for Peralta to be a productive major leaguer.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that you and I had both talked at length about this, but we haven't seen the last of Peralta as a Cardinal. I mean, it's coming. I don't know what they're going to do. Back to these things have a way of working themselves out that we've talked about, you know, a bunch in the last, you know, two or three episodes. It was interesting when they were talking last night. I think this is where Edmonds separates himself from everybody else because he's so good about these things, to where they were talking about Muzelak had given the report before the game yesterday about how they were going to handle Peralta, you know, his minor league rehab, make sure he's, you know, make sure he's healthy, you know, make sure he's up to game speed and all that. But he was not only going to play third, he was going to move back shortstop. And, you know, that was one of those, I think it was clickbait a little bit out of Dan. But I understand where he was coming from. He's like, that's very interesting. But Edmund said, hey, and a guy like Peralta, why not show, put him in a position where he needs to show his mobility off? You know, and he worded it like that. And I was like, you could tell that, A, he knows what he's talking about, and B, he probably knows what the club's thinking on that. I don't know how much that even pertains to what we're expecting out of him, what's going on in the lower levels. But defensively, I'm not ultimately that worried about it. I just hope he hits. I would love to see him hit to make an impact, but he really hasn't been good since the first half of 15. That's what worries me about thinking any sustained success is coming. But, you know, you know how I feel, and I just don't think that they're just going to do away with him. You know, they don't want to embarrass the guy by releasing him. It'll be a situation that they can find him a better spot to play. Maybe some DH, that may happen, but I think that he's going to be up, and he may be a big bat in the second half of the season, or at least the second half of the first half of the season.
I know everybody is assuming that, you know, as soon as Peralta's back, Mike Matheny is going to stick him in at third, and no matter what happens, he's going to be playing and hitting fourth, and I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, even Peralta has said, look, you know, I know I'm not getting my job back when I get here. I mean, Jerko's playing too well. I mean, yeah, Peralta might start a day or so after he gets the call-up just to try to get him back to game speed. But I think for the most part, we'll see him off the bench. And if he's got something left, I mean, he can definitely be a potent guy at that spot. I mean, a guy that can come in and pop a double or a homer even in late-inning situations. You know, I'm just not ready to write him completely off. Because he did have a decent spring, like you said, though. I mean, he struggled last year. He struggled, obviously, at the beginning of this year. So it is hard to know exactly what it is. But, you know, as we see, you know, you hate to see these people just drop off the face of the earth, but it happens. And so it may be that he doesn't have anything left. But I'm optimistic that, you know, the Cardinals story is what we're going to see. And And that's hopefully a healthy Peralta now can, again, he's not going to hit 25 homers or anything like that, but can still be a productive member of the squad, even if it's coming off the bench.
Yeah, agreed. That's I would love to see success out of him just because he's been a good Cardinal. So, yeah, it's yet to be seen. It's really tough for me to pin down an answer for this. I just really don't know. I'm just convinced that they're not going to release him. I think they're going to try to get everything they can out of him. But, you know, I don't know if that's a bad thing. You know, we all agree that there's a bunch of decent to good players on this team. Why not throw another one in there to try to catch fire, you know, without that superstar to circle around? You know, let's just see what we've got.
And I think, honestly, I think that's part of the problem that Wong has had is I think a lot of us have started to expect, you know, almost all-star caliber a player at every position, and that's just not the case. I mean, we're going to have average players that can be still good, still productive, still valuable to the team, when they're not going to be, you know, all-stars. And I think that may be where Wong is at. I think a lot of us expected a lot out of Wong, don't get me wrong. And there was this expectation that he could play at an all-star level. But he may just not be that. And again, that's what we have in a lot of, like you said, we've had a lot of players, I think, that are at that average to good level. And that doesn't work as well when there's nobody at the great level.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we were on Twitter earlier this week. I was having a discussion with some of the guys. And they were talking about Grichuk's numbers. And I brought up Grichuk, Wong, Piscotty a little bit, and I said, if we had MVP type Albert that was here up until, you know, until he left, if we had that player, not the California Angel Albert, if we had that, these players would be considered really good, and it's because you have a superstar that levels the playing field. Without that superstar to get that big hit, driving the big runs, to get that focus put on them the whole time, the flaws really get exposed on some of these incremental pieces that we need. I think Grichuk's going to be a heck of a player one day. I think Wong is the same. They're not going to be Albert Pujols. You know, they're going to be good players on a good team. I don't think they're ever going to be that standout superstar. So in order to put them in that light, I think they're going to get overexposed, and you're really going to see the flaws.
Yeah, it seems likely, but you know, we just got to kind of, I think, somewhat adjust the expectations that these guys aren't going to be, you know, we did get spoiled by those early 2000 teams where you have Scott Rowland and Matt Holliday and, well, I guess you didn't have them at the same time, but, you know, Edmonds.
You always had the big, always Pujols. Had the big three. I know.
Right. I mean, and then you had like Renteria, you know, those years where you had those three and Renteria and, I mean, it did feel like, you know, even Fernando Vina, you had all-star or better at so many of those positions. And that's just not the way it is now. In fact, depending on what you think of Matt Carpenter, Matt Carpenter plays first base, he's not an all-star there. I mean, and you don't have an all-star except for maybe Carlos Martinez. You know, even though Matt Carpenter's your best hitter, he's not an all-star at first base. So,
And, you know, numbers wise, someone could probably prove me wrong on this too, and somebody could just come out and, you know, there's numbers to point that can prove anything at this point. You know, that's the kind of way I feel. Well, Renteria was never the same player. He was a good player, but he was never the player that signed that big contract in Boston. Right. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to say, well, he signed that contract. He became complacent, but they didn't have that superstar either. You know, they didn't have Ortiz at that point. You know, they didn't have Monster Ortiz at that point. You know, it was, were his flaws exposed a little bit? Was there too much on his plate? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't, maybe. I mean, they did have, I mean, they were coming off the, you know, World Series title. I think that was, I mean, they had Pedroia. Did they have Pedroia for that one?
Maybe yeah, not. Well, they, you know what, they did have, you know, Ortiz was coming into his own at that point.
Yeah, I mean, there were still some people there. And he did have a decent year, you know, in San Francisco after that. And you're right, he never was what he was in St. Louis, but he did do well, in, you know, especially in San Francisco. I don't know. So I guess that's about all that happened this week, unless I'm missing something you can think of.
Unless you want to talk about the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, we can go ahead and do that right
okay,
here.
Okay, I didn't know if that was another segment
we'll do
not,
that right so. Here. We'll do that stick here. The Cardinals did announce, actually last week, the winners of this year's Hall of Fame. And for the first time since the Cardinals have started this, it's only going to be a three-man class. Usually it's been four, and if I remember right, it's the two come in with a fan vote, one comes in for the red ribbon, and then the ownership has the option to put somebody in. I think it's an owner's decision. And this year, they did not take that that option. So the Blue Ribbon Committee sends in Pepper Martin from the 30s and 40s, and I think we know the name. We know that he was a good player. I think he was kind of a cog on those, the 40s teams, maybe. I'm going to say that, and then I'm going to be completely wrong. Let me pull up Pepper Martin before I get too far. But,
yeah, he was a gas house ganger.
It was one of those. I wasn't sure exactly which, 28 to 44. So, for the most part, he was back there with Dizzy and all those guys. Although he did play, he played in the 44 team that won. He was off to war, I guess, in 42 because there's a gap between 40 and 44. Although, actually, he may have, actually take that back, it's probably the other way around. He probably came back to play in 44 because everybody was gone to war. Most likely. But played his whole entire career in St. Louis. Was a four-time All-Star. Three times got MVP votes. Solid all-around player. Again, not a guy that's going to go into Cooperstown or anything, but he was a pretty good cog at a time. That was a fairly good time for the Cardinals there, and played on that 34 team. But the fans voted in Tim McCarver and Mark McGwire. We have talked earlier when the ballot came out of who we expected to get in or who we were voting for, let's put it that way. And I voted for McGwire and Roland, and I really never expected that McGwire would actually get it. I thought some of his baggage would be enough to pull him down with some of the fan voting. So I was glad to see him get that vote. Were you a little surprised when they announced him, though?
Yeah, I was. I was. I know that I was kind of in the same boat. I was like, I just don't think that's ever going to happen. And we had the discussion right when the nominees were announced. And I kind of, not only the, I hate to say scandal, because I want to stay away from that. But even with all that, I didn't know if he had the longevity until you and I start breaking down everybody. And to be honest, everybody was kind of the same in years. I really thought that it would probably be Roland and Carlton. That's kind of what I was thinking, and I just thought, I don't know. I think they're going to welcome Carlton back, kind of like the way they did Simmons. That's kind of how I felt about it. But you kind of won me over on that. You were just like, hey, he's the reason there's a lot of fans here in town. And I've heard Buffett talk about it. I've heard a bunch of people that are in the St. Louis area say, hey, whatever he did, he did. He said, but I'll tell you, it was magic. And, people, that was for the first time in the mid-90s, St. Louis people didn't like baseball, they said. And then McGwire came along, and it really reinvigorated everything. So I'm glad to see him in. But, I was slightly surprised to see that it was that easy.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. For people that are younger, and I know you and I are the same age, so you know what I'm talking about, you just don't realize how much St. Louis, even for all its success, was kind of a baseball backwater. We're talking now, legitimately talking about the Cardinals going after a guy like Manny Machado, that they're in the race for this guy, for Luis Robert. This is not even feasible without Mark McGwire, because he changed the mindset, he changed the idea of St. Louis. New ownership came in in 96, and that's why, Wheaton got McGwire. It's hard to separate the two. But without McGwire coming, I think, and without McGwire, reinvigorating not only baseball in St. Louis, but baseball in general, with him and Sammy Sosa, I just don't know where this club would be right now. We would not be talking about 20 years of greatness, though, I don't think. For as much as ownership did, they can only do so much with the, if the people aren't coming to the ballpark, you kind of get into the cycle. You can't improve the team if people don't come to the ballpark, but they won't come to the ballpark unless you improve the team. But McGwire was able to do that, and really get St. Louis back on the baseball map. So, he was only here for, 88, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, four full seasons. half, you know, a couple months of 97. And then, of course, 2001, he was hardly, you know, with his injuries, it wasn't quite the same. But, you know, no matter, like you said, no matter what happened or how he did it, it was a franchise-defining move and definitely deserves it. As for McCarver, obviously lots of success, and obviously he's back now as a broadcaster. He was going to get in at some point in time, some way or another. I think that he fits into that Hall of Fame. You're right.
Yeah.
It's a little surprising. I'm a little surprised, especially if the ownership makes its decisions afterwards, if they didn't put Carlton as their pick, so that Carlton and Carver could go in together, being that they are tied so tightly, not only here in St. Louis, but also in Philadelphia. You know, it's a little surprising they didn't put those two together. But yeah, I don't know what Carlton's relationship is to St. Louis. I know he came back not too long ago. It's always kind of interesting. Some of these guys that didn't retire in St. Louis, you know, what is their relationship? What do they think? But I think it's going to be an interesting ceremony when they have it in August and see how that all works out. It'll be interesting to see what McGuire says after, like I said, being away from St. Louis for so long.
Yeah, that's the one thing, you know, people are going to argue with me on this, you know, just do the, you know, transgressions. But he's a pretty genuine dude, mm-hmm. I would think. And, you know, he was, I always thought that he was, you know, I heard that he broke down in tears whenever they told him he was coming on board. I don't think that's fake. You know, I felt like you could see the emotion on his face through the chase, you know, and all that. So good for them. And I think it's good for the Cardinals that they let him in. The McCarver deal, I agree with you. It was one of those, he fit the mold. I thought it was going to be him eventually, you know, one way or the other. And now it kind of, you kind of point toward, yeah, I just don't know much about Pepper Martin. You know what I mean?
Right,
I can't even lie about that. It's, you know, he's talked about in the Bill James books, but even those teams are dominated by other players, you know, that they're talked about. So I just don't know, you know, any of the research on it. I know he was a stud, and, you know, I've read a lot of the Cardinals books and, you know, what it was about him, but that's about all I can. Any remark I have goes to that. So I'm happy with the class. You know, I very rarely am going to say that I'm not, you know, for who they allow in, but I was kind of proud to see McGuire. I know there was a bunch of guys that lashed out going, oh, now this is the way we're going. We're letting in a cheater do this and this, but I agree with you. I think that the, regardless of how he did it, I think that it was I think it was just as big a deal as you just commented. You know, I think it was huge, and you're exactly right. I never even would have thought of this, but yeah, that what you said about the organization after that move was made is pretty mind boggling, considering the 20 years that we've had since then.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty awesome.
And I will say, I know a lot of people are agitating about Ray Langford, and I don't disagree. Ray Langford deserves to be on this ballot and deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but I have a feeling it was public enough this year that Ray Langford will be on the ballot next year.
Mark my word, that's my
early shot is Ray Langford. I mean, there's two guys coming off the ballot they're going to have to replace, and it may be that they wanted to get McGuire up there and they'll start looking at those teams, but you know, Ray Langford represents the 90s basically because there's nobody else to you know. Yeah, he's a guy that's going to get on that ballot. And Lee Smith eventually probably will be on the ballot. But, you know, that's an interesting case because, he, you know, definitely was dominant in St. Louis, but it was dominant in a lot of places. Anyway, we don't need to hash out next year's ballot just yet. That's my guess is.
I thought so. And for the same reason that you just said, I think there was enough public turmoil on it to where I think it would have to be, he would have to be on next year or, you know, and it also, this is more than I've ever talked about their Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
you know, so they may have won, you know, to get us talking about it. So I don't know, but I expect him to be on.
All right, well then let's go ahead and do our futures report.
0-1 to Pujols in the air left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering 3-run home run. stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
Yeah, like I said, I got a chance to talk to Kyle, and we'll play that here, and then we'll discuss it on the flip side.
And we're here with Kyle Reese from Redbird Daily to talk about the minor leagues. Kyle, let's go ahead and start with what we saw tonight. We're recording this Thursday night. Two injuries for the Cardinals. It seems like at least Stephen Piscotty is probably going on the DL. Maybe Dexter Fowler. That means they're probably going to tap into the minor leagues. What is your picks here of what they're going to do?
Yeah, you know, you nailed it. They that ominous Stephen Piscotty is staying in St. Louis to be further evaluated. That's never a good sign. I read somewhere already that Tommy Pham is supposed to meet the team in Atlanta. That's fine and all. But if they need to call up another guy, and I've been playing this scenario in my head now for a couple minutes, I think what I would do is I think I'd call up Luke Vogt, and I think I'd play him at first base immediately. And if you needed – and I'd move Matt Carpenter to left immediately, Randall Grichuk to center, and that's how I would play it. And then play it by ear from there. What Luke Vogt has done in Memphis, it's nothing short of incredible. He's a little old for the age, but it's his first turn in Memphis, and in 89 at-bats entering tonight, entering Thursday night, that is. He has 6 home runs. He struck out a little bit too much, 22 times in 89 at-bats, but his average is .348. He has an OBP of .426, and he's slugging the ball, 7 doubles, a triple. He looks poised, and personally, that's what I would do. And, you know, I've heard a lot of talk about Carpenter, you know, move Carpenter back to third or keep Carpenter at first. I think we know at this point that Carpenter isn't a good enough defensive third baseman, and I think at this point we know that Carpenter struggles at first. He really is best suited for left field if you want to get technical, and that's personally what I would do if they needed to call up another person on an emergency basis if Dexter Fowler was going to go on the DL. They have a 40-man spot open because Anthony Garcia was outrighted off the 40-man and sent back down to Springfield. So they have the opportunity, they have the chance to open up a spot. Now, I imagine that Mr. Matheny will get really cute with Matt Adams, which is really what I'm scared of. But I think that's personally what I would do.
You know, honestly, though, we were talking about this a little bit on Twitter. I think... You know, tonight would have been the most obvious night to put Matt Adams out in the outfield, and they didn't do it.
That's a great point.
They moved Diaz out there, I mean, which is something that's even more out of the realm of what we would expect. So my feeling is that they don't have any urge to get Matt Adams out there. Now, I could be wrong, and that's one of those things that could change, but hopefully not. Now, Voit, it just feels like this is a guy that the Cardinals need to kind of, you know, strike while the iron is hot, that he may not have a large window, but maybe he's hitting now and go ahead and get him up. Is that right?
I completely agree. Again, this is a guy who is at AAA for the first time, and he is blowing. I mean, he's hitting the cover off the ball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of these guys, they only have a certain window for their peak. And he's older, and if it was ever going to happen, it was going to be right now. I imagine his confidence is through the roof, and to me, you know, skill set aside, if you're going to make your major league debut, your confidence needs to be as high as it possibly can. You know, if he ends up struggling a little bit in the next month, and maybe you've compromised his chances of being a legitimate contributor on a major league level. So yes, you're dead on, Daniel. That's definitely now's the time for Luke Vogt if you're going
to
do it.
And I was about to say, it kind of feels like if it doesn't happen now, it's not going to happen. You know, if he can't do it after this kind of a month, and at least give him up there for a bat off the bench or something, if nothing else more than that. So,
yeah.
Anyway, well, let's use that as a jumping off point. You know, you earlier this week posted on the Redbird Daily your hitter and pitcher of the month from the minor leagues for April, and Luke Voit was your hitter. Jack Flaherty was your pitcher. Talk a little bit about how he did this month.
Mr. Jack Flaherty was about as dominant of a pitcher at Springfield as you can imagine, which has been really important there because that foursome of Flaherty, Gomber, Dakota Hudson and Sandy Alcantara was supposed to be lights out, and the other three had their roller coaster up and down. But Jack Flaherty has just he just mowed through the league. He in a little over 32 innings, struck out 28 batters, held opposing hitters to a .191 average against, and his ERA was 0.56. He didn't allow any home runs. He only walked four guys. And as far as I can remember, that is probably the most dominant like minor league month that I can even think of. I know Luke Weaver had he missed all of April last year because of the broken wrist, and he had a really solid May, but his June was great. But even that, his ERA was right around what Flaherty's was in April of this year. But the batting average was higher. Everything, all the other peripherals were higher. Flaherty just, he mowed down the Texas League. And again, because of where he's at, that cannot be, you can't take that for granted how great he's been.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was Luke Vogt at AAA. He was our hitter of the month, and he almost did that hands down. And it was Flaherty at AA, and he did that hands down as well.
Yeah, I made it for some easy decisions for you.
I didn't even look at it, to be honest with you. It was basically there already for me. I just signed it.
There you go. if I'm right, the Texas League is really usually considered a hitter's league, right? So for the fact that Flaherty allowed, you know, not only had these dominant numbers, but allowed no homers, that's huge.
That is the number for sure. The Texas League can ebb and flow. It's definitely it definitely leans hitter friendly. Those numbers kind of like work themselves out as the season goes along a little bit, but the home run numbers, that's what you want to see, you know, and the fact that he hasn't allowed any, and it seems like all the contact against him is all soft. So everything that you want to see and everything that you want to read is dead on with Flaherty, and that is so important right now.
So, I mean, obviously the Cardinals are not necessarily going to just rush him up, but we have seen AA pitchers skip AAA and go on to the majors. There's not a need at the moment, but is he on a short list maybe if there does become one?
So here's what I think. That's an interesting and really great question, because Luke Weaver made his debut, or not his debut, he started the opener for Memphis and only got through two innings, and then he had back spasms, and he's been out nearly all of April with a back issue. But since then, Luke Weaver has been on the DL. He made his second start with Memphis the other day, and he pitched great. He did his thing at six innings, a couple hits, six Ks. Like, he did exactly what Luke Weaver did at AA last year. And what's about ready to happen in the next 2 weeks, because Marco Gonzalez is throwing at extended spring training, as is John Gant. Now, in the next 2 weeks, those two guys will probably be in the Memphis rotation. And the reason I bring that up is if one of the starters at the major league level were to get hurt, then I think it would probably be Luke Weaver or probably John Gant, who got the promotion. And then Flaherty would absolutely have to be the guy to replace them, you know, replace that player in the AAA rotation. I mean, that's who personally I would pick, even if, you know, one of the guys currently on the AAA rotation were righted or got a demotion or moved to the bullpen. Like, Flaherty's earned that. And I would imagine that if you were to ask John Mozeliak that question, he would say the same thing in the way that he would say it.
It should be interesting, something to watch. Again, there doesn't seem, not that there's not a need for better pitching in St. Louis, but there doesn't seem to be any spots for it. So that's something to watch as the season goes long and things happen. Let's end this up by talking about this last week. You know, this first week of May, how are things looking as the calendar has turned?
Well, you know, speaking of Memphis, they've had a great week. Again, entering Thursday night, not including Thursday night's results, won six in a row. The pitching had been great. Arturo Reyes, since taking over in the starting rotation for Tyler Lyons, while Tyler Lyons was doing rehabilitation, has pitched great. Daniel Ponce de Leon is pitching great. Chris Ellis is still struggling. Josh Zied, he is still struggling. As a matter of fact, I think I think Josh is about as perfectly suited for a bullpen role as you can imagine. And that's personally where I would put him as some of these guys start coming off the DL and pitching back in the Memphis rotation. But Memphis had a really good turn in the rotation. And Luke Voit, Patrick Wisdom, and Paul DeJong have carried that offense. All three of those guys have hit above 350. They're getting on base. Just this week, they've all hit above 350. They all have been on base above 40% of the time. They're all slugging, 1.2 and above. They all have three home runs. They all have at least six RBIs. And those three guys have anchored 6-0 run Memphis, which is important because Memphis was going, they were struggling. They'd have a couple close wins and they'd get blown out of the water. So it's really good. The other good thing that happened in Memphis happened tonight. And again, I don't know what the results are tonight. I'm on vacation. I'm trying to stay up to date on exactly what happened tonight. But Carson Kelly, who hasn't hit particularly well, he's still getting on base at a decent clip. He's not striking out. He's striking out a little more than he usually does, but he's not striking out too much. Carson Kelly had a great game tonight. He went 3-for-4. He had two doubles. He hit his fifth home run on the year. That's good to see. So right now Memphis is setting the pace. They had an amazing week, and that's really where I've been keyed in on. There are some of the lower levels, Peoria and Palm Beach. It's been a weird week. Peoria only played four games because of all of the rain that hit the Midwest, and Palm Beach. Trying to pick up a hitter of the week for Palm Beach was a task. No one hit well at all. Like, there wasn't a player who excelled throughout the entire week. There were a bunch of guys who had, really good games and then were just shut out during the other games. So it was difficult finding someone for Palm Beach, but I would say that this was one of the – since the first week of the season, this was probably the best week in the minor league system.
Well, that's good, and hopefully they can carry that going forward. We cannot leave, of course, without a Luis Robert update. I know that we're only about 16 days from the signing deadline. Is there anything rumored around that you've heard of that you have made you interested or made you happy, made you sad?
No. Well, thinking about it, it makes you happy and then sad because you start thinking about the reality of it. I know that the White Sox appeared to be enamored with Mr. Robert, and that's kind of hit me a lot harder than I thought it would. I didn't expect them to be as involved as they are. That also tells you, because they're not over their cap, that also tells you that they're willing, if they try to spend high on Robert, that tells you that they're willing to take the penalty for next year too. And of course that's not a big deal because the international rules change, the international signing rules change entering next year. Entering July 2nd of this year, pardon me.
Right.
But I think, I was told by someone that I trust that the Cardinals workout with Robert was going to happen this weekend. I think it's unusual that we haven't heard anything, but when I step back and think about it, that's how the Cardinals do things, right? You don't hear about it. It's just all of a sudden Dexter Fowler signs with the Cardinals. As a matter of fact, if it wouldn't have been for a local St. Louis fan page, no one would have known that Dexter Fowler was flying out of Las Vegas headed to St. Louis. So, I was told that somewhere in between last week, I was told somewhere in between Thursday and Sunday, the Cardinals were going to have their workout with Luis Robert. And he's worked out with everyone except for I want to say it was either the Astros or the A's at this point. So, like you said, 16 days away. And I would imagine that he'll have one more big showcase where all of the teams that are interested will be there. And I would think that, and there isn't a date on that yet, but I would think that within, 48, 72 hours of that, everyone will have a pretty good idea of where he's going. But other than that, it's been an alarmingly quiet week, especially after he worked out with the White Sox and everything got really quiet after that. And I don't like that.
No, he worked out with the Padres on Tuesday, according to the reports. So, like I said, hopefully he is going to work out with the Cardinals this weekend, and maybe we'll hear a little bit from there. But I'm sure his camp's playing it. I mean, everybody involved knows everything, but they're probably playing it a little closer to their vest right now. doesn't really help him, I don't think, to go too much in the media. I wouldn't think. It's not a typical free agent situation.
Yeah, so. For sure.
All right, Kyle, we appreciate it. We'll let you get back to your vacation, and we look forward to talking to you hopefully again next week.
As always, Daniel, thank you very much.
All right, well, Kyle's, as we mentioned, Kyle's suggestion was, you know, if these injuries do become where we need an extra, another bat to come up, is to bring up Luke Voit because he is on doing so well on a tear. That would require Mike Carpenter moving out to the outfield. I don't disagree with Kyle. I think it's a very good idea, and you've got to strike while the iron's hot on Luke. I like Luke Voit, who is really hitting his prime right now, and he's probably only going to be, you know, a replacement player a little bit better in the majors. He's not a huge prospect, but you want to get him while you could. But it seems to me it's very difficult for me to see them moving Matt Carpenter to the outfield with all the issues that we've had this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't. There's a part of me that wonders how much of the lineup Matt Carpenter writes every day. You know, by you know, I don't think by any means he's dug his heels in and says, "Hey, I'm not moving from first," or "Hey, if you're going to move me in the lineup, I want to stay at one spot." I don't think that he's that type of player. But I do think they're bending over backwards to make him happy. You know, to put him in that Matt Holliday light. You know, hey, this is what we're doing for you. Produce for us. And it's interesting that it's never been considered of him moving out there. You know, he kind of did a little bit of all, you know, played third all through the minors. Then came up, if you remember, to replace Albert when he broke his wrist on that collision at first, and played a lot of first base. Well, that year, he actually, even in the playoffs, had a start in left field and also had a start at first base. So it's not foreign to him. But, you know, my only issue with that is it me or has he gotten incredibly slow?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if he's completely healthy, but I don't know how much I'd like him running into that gap.
Well, I mean, you did see the foot race that he and Yadier Molina had.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This week, and Yadi beat him in the short dash.
Yeah.
You know, Tara and I on Gateway the week before on Sunday had postulated. I was taking that Carpenter was the worst base runner on the team, and she went with Piscotty. And after that video came out, she said, "Yeah, you win."
I love Tara's opinion, but I think it's Carpenter heads down. I think that you know, this can go off into a whole another direction. I'll try not to do that. Piscotty's done some dumb things, but I think he's trying to do everything right now. You know, I think he's kind of doing what Wong tried to do last year and part of this year. He's trying to carry the whole team on his shoulders. Maybe I'm just trying to convince myself that Piscotty's still going to be a stud. I don't know, but Carpenter is terrible. I mean, there was even a ball hit tonight in their outfield. I mean, balls fly out of there, but there was a ball that anybody should have scored really easy. And whenever I saw that it was him tagging third and the way that he did it, I was like, he's the one guy that's going to get thrown out in this situation. He ultimately scored, of course, but it's still, I mean, there was that skepticism. I don't know if it's the whole lineup base running or just Carpenter, but, man, he's kind of pitiful sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, I guess, yeah, I'm really interested. I would like to see them, you know, be able to tap Voit while he is still producing. But we'll have to wait and see if there's a possibility. And like I said, hopefully Fowler is healthy enough and we don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Luis Robert, the clock is ticking. We're looking at a week and a half until that decision has to be made. And like Kyle said, he expected one more big workout and then maybe a decision after that. But hopefully, you know, and he thought maybe the Cardinals were supposed to see him, you know, work out this week. If they are, they're not saying a whole lot about it. Just did another search to make sure it's not coming up that any news stories about it. But they're keeping a close eye on him. And again, it still feels like it's one of those things that they have to win, but you know, doesn't always work out that way. So
yeah, very true.
All right, well, let's get into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
And really, we don't have much in this segment except for the fact that we have plenty of Twitter questions, some of which we've already answered, some of which we may not get to, and some of which have a Star Wars theme to it, since yesterday was Star Wars Day, May the 4th, and so some of them came in around that, and we will leave those for the last. Let's take one here from Cassie Pink Daisy 08. As she says, do you think as well as he's doing that Fan will be included in a trade this season? I think that, you know, after a night like tonight, that helps that case.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just, you know, I think the Cardinals would love to sell high on Fan.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, and at this point, I don't know if anyone outside of Molina is off the table. Well, Molina and Martinez, I even say that with a little bit of question mark. But I think that they're going to be in the hunt the whole time. To greatly improve, I think they're going to have to move an asset. Mm-hmm. I would love for it to be Fam that could bring you in that whatever you needed, like a veteran third baseman, you know, an expiring contract, you know, Fam plus to get somebody. If he hit well enough where you can do that, that'd be great. But at this point, you know my opinion, I can guarantee it, they're going to get pitching help, you know, of some sort. Now, if Fam could bring you the better market value on that, I'm all for it. But I think that a hot bat, and I've even heard Jim Duquette say this. He said, he goes, if Fam were to hit the market, you'd have a bunch of interested parties, because anybody thinks that they're going to change him. He hits the ball so hard that, he could be a monster somewhere. Now, the injuries always linger, and that was before the season even started. They said if they were to release him, that he would not be on the market very long. So you would have to think there's some takers, and to get whatever we need to get back, I'm all for it.
You know what would solve some of the questions we've been asking? It'd be to trade Carpenter. I don't see, they're not going to do that.
No, I'm not. I completely agree with that. I mean, it, just like last week, or I can't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I mean, you could really tell in my voice that I was down on Carpenter. Mm-hmm. There's plays at first where I'm really worried how it's going to end up when it's thrown to him.
Yeah.
And, Kyle pointed something out that I thought was interesting, was he's just not going to help on the infield anymore. Yeah. And I'm like, man, it's pretty sad that you're going to get a, 31-year-old DH. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean by that? And it's, I know what you mean. I mean, that would alleviate a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it just feels like this. You know, you've got to play Carpenter at first because you can't play him anywhere else, but he doesn't really fit at first because he doesn't have the bat that goes at first. So without putting him in the outfield, which doesn't work because you have other outfielders, he's obviously a very good player. The Cardinals aren't going to do that. But it would be interesting to think that, because, Carpenter would bring back quite a return, and you could say that's going to, hurt the offense. But, I don't know. I mean, if you traded Carpenter and something for Donaldson, I'm just saying, and I don't know if you could, but just say you could, and you move Jerko over to first every day, have you really hurt the offense? I don't know that you have.
Yeah.
So, anyway, again, that's just kind of one of those random thoughts that, come up, and I'm sure people would just jump all over me for, but I feel like it could solve some issues.
If you look at it and you're thinking, okay, I think there's a move to be made. Now, anybody, what's going to happen is Reyes' name is going to get brought up, Weaver's name is going to get brought up, and any of the arms in Springfield right now are going to get brought up. You have to think that Martinez is another one that will get brought up to get the asset that they want. If you're going to trade a Giolito type for Adam Eaton,
that's what's going to happen. That's what guys are going to ask for at this point. They kind of set the bar was set high in trades this offseason, and I think that was a reason why the Cardinals didn't improve in some areas, because they're just like, well, we can't give this away. You know, we're not stocked, because, you know, Mozeliak made those comments several times of, we have a gap and it's really hurting us. You know, they have double-A ready guys right now that are 2 years away from the big leagues, or a year away, year and a half away from the big leagues. They don't have that gap that they can trade right now to improve and to keep what they've got. So, you know, they painted themselves into a corner, you know, as far as that goes. So in order to make a deal, it's going to have to be with somebody like that. And, you know, if you can get a bat in Hosmer, Eric Hosmer could make a bad infield good really quick. You know, it's one of those. He's not a middle of the order bat, but you could really improve defensively, and he's a fantastic base runner. So it's not really what you want. It's one of those would go into the good player, another one of the good players in the pot. But they're going to have to trade some big asset to improve.
Yeah, it feels like it. And that kind of leads. Well, there's two questions that kind of leads to. We'll go first with Mr. Ben Kelly, Beefcake 5, who submits questions quite often. He says, other than Machado and potentially Donaldson, who are some third basemen you'd like the Cardinals to target? I know you have mentioned, or we have mentioned in the past, I think you were a fan of Longoria in that role.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's on a team-friendly contract, and, you know, the face of the franchise that you know, probably aren't going to part ways, but I think he's an elite player. I think that him in a market like St. Louis would be in the Donaldson mold. You know, I think that you would hear his name. I mean, Donaldson's doing what he's doing in Toronto, you know, but he's also in the AL East, which gets all the publicity. So I don't know. I think Longoria is a great player. I think he's a great defensive third baseman. And, you know, last year he put up some big numbers at the plate for a bad team. I'd love to bring him on board. I mean, that would be one of those to eat that contract. And if you could convince them to, hey, we'll take the contract. But that goes back to him being the franchise face down there and the marquee player they've had for the last, you know, 6-8 years. I don't think you can get away with just sending them, you know, your second tier talent and eating up all his contract. I think they've got to show to that fan base, as small as it is, that, hey, we're still trying here. So I think it would take an arm and a leg to get him, even if you were to eat that money.
Yeah. You know, there's Frazier out there, but we've talked about it, and I'm not a big fan of Frazier.
Sure.
You know, obviously, I mean, even though it costs an arm and a leg, and the Rockies aren't going to do it, but you'd love to get a Arredondo. I mean, that would be a guy that you dream about, but, you know, there's just no possible way to do that.
Arenado, to me, is right below Machado. If not, even two. I mean, he's amazing. I saw Arenado for a year and a half here in Tulsa when he was in the Rockies organization. And the knock on him is he was lazy. A lot of it was he's just so bored because he was so much better than those guys. I can say this. Two guys came through here, and there's a third guy that will surprise you as far as infield arm. Tulowitzki and Arenado it was like a missile. It was unreal to watch those guys throw. Those were the two best infield arms out of the Rocky side. Another great infield arm that I saw, and it makes me wonder if he's not injured, was Ledmus Diaz.
Mm.
Whenever he was in Springfield, I was like, it was the year after he had all the injury issues, you know, just breaking off all that rust when he was here for the short time. He had a cannon. I saw him make some throws for short. I was like, oh my gosh, this guy can play. And, you know, makes me wonder if he's not hurt a little bit more. But to go back to that, Arenado would oh, man, that'd be huge. I mean, it led the National League, and was he right under Carter, or was he tied with Carter for the National League home run lead last year? He had 40.
Yeah, I think I want to say Carter had 41, but I may be wrong.
I think Carter had 41.
Now, I want to say he may have tied for the lead the year before that. I don't remember. No, I mean, and I may be wrong. I'm not looking it up. But, you know, I mean, obviously the power probably drops a little bit coming out of Coors Field, but not a whole lot. And I know you and I are both big fans of Scott Rolen, and it feels like that's a guy, you know, Arredondo would be like Scott Rolen part two, that kind of defense plus a big, huge bat. But, you know, the Rockies realize that, too. And the Rockies, I mean, one, they're winning right now. But two, yeah. You know, they've got a market as well. And I don't know, you know, even if they could do that as well, no matter what you gave them back. I mean, you could give them Carpenter and who knows what else. It still probably wouldn't work out very well. So,
yeah, and that's, and I think he's up. I think it's this year, the end of next year, that he's up for free. I think his contract, not just money wise, but years wise, is close to Donaldson's. So that would you'd get big fish issue, you know, really quick. But yeah. Man, a year and a half of him would be nice.
Yeah, it would be. I'm gonna have to pull that up. I for some reason thought I hadn't heard his name in that 2018 class. So. It may well be. Let's see if they've changed this up a little bit now. I appreciate Baseball Reference changing everything. But
yeah, it is. A little bit,
I have to find stuff. Yeah, he's free agent at the end of 18.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. If that's the case, no, he's arbitration eligible. His earliest free agent's 2020. He's still under control. So he would be, you know, you're still looking at, he's got 3+ years out in Colorado still. So, yeah, you would like to think the Cardinals had solved third base by then. But you never know.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations, too, where Colorado has all the control right now. You know, I mean, they're going to lose some big arbitration numbers, but they've got all the control. After that, it's gonna be haywire.
I will say they've already signed him to a deal. He's getting $17 million, I think, over the next. I think he gets $17 million next year and the year after. Let's see, his contract is he gets almost $12 million this year. Then he's got almost $18 million next year, and then you get an arbitration year after that. But he'll probably, I mean, if he's getting that, you're signing him by then. Or, you know, maybe that's one of those things, you trade him at that point in time. And so maybe...
Because if you can't get him signed, that's going to be a record arbitration number.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's easily so. Scott said... It's Texas Card Fan 1 again. his was a big, long thing. Is the sky falling? Are the Cards who they are? A middling... Perhaps sudden middle of the pack team. What's the fix now? You know, Scott also put up a poll today. He asked, you know, are the Cardinals a playoff team, a 500 team, a sub 500 team, or terrible? And I said, you know, right now, 500 team and playoff team isn't that far off from the same thing. You know, the Cardinals tonight win. They're 14-14 at 500. As of right now, the Reds are still playing, but right in the moment, they're tied with the Reds for third.
They won 13-4 tonight.
Just refreshed the standings. So right now, as Milwaukee, I guess if Milwaukee loses here to Pittsburgh, and I don't know what that game is, or if it's even...
I think they're down 4-0.
You know, then they would be tied for third with Milwaukee. But... no matter what, they're a game and a half behind the Cubs right now for the division lead. So, in a half game out of the wild card spot. So, you know, they're playing middle in baseball, but the rest of the National League is as well. I mean, you look at the Nationals at 20-9, and the Rockies are at 18-12. But that's, you know, those are really the only two teams that are really doing a whole lot.
Yeah.
So
I agree, and I think I know that the Rockies are. Improved. There's no doubt about it, and I know that the Diamondbacks are too when they got healthy, but you know, I'm not so sure how good the National League is right now. I mean, I think Washington's loaded. I do, and I think that the Cubs are going to start playing better, but I always think there's a hangover, so I think that that's going to be a problem. So, you know, you're right. I think 500 maybe, you know, not that far from a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, even right now. Excuse me. Sorry about that. That's probably way too loud. probably, you know, right now you're looking at 85 wins being a team that's in significantly in the wild card hunt. And 85 wins, you know, four games over 500 basically. I guess that we can't technically be 8 games over .500, but still. You know, it just, that doesn't feel out of reach. I mean, you're not saying the Cardinals are going to go out and win. You know, even winning 90 right now feels like a little bit of a stretch for this team. But they're not going to have to win 90, at least unless people catch fire, to be right there in the wild card hunt. So, what's the fix for this team? You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously getting, you know, we've talked a lot about it, getting a big bat, getting a star guy in here would help a lot. But, you know, I mean, it's difficult to see how all those pieces fit together because, like we said, third base is that place you're looking at, but third base is one of those places that's producing for the Cardinals right now. So, you know, how does that work?
And like we talked about last week, it's I don't know if a 1 year pickup is better than Jerko. You know, that's it's going to be tough. You know, like a Frazier to go get a rental, and you know, I talked about, you know, the Cardinals' comfort zone. You know, they say they're going to step out of their comfort zone to do things. Well, that can go a bunch of different directions. I'm not so sure what they mean by that. But, you know, we've never known of to pick up a rental before. I think that may be in the equation. I don't know if anybody out there is that great of an improvement over Jerko. I think there's going to be incremental improvement. I think there are going to be some moves made to improve the defense, unless we see some defensive improvement prolonged. You know, here we go, you know, we'll go 4 or 5 games where we think, okay, this is better. And then they completely shoot themselves in the foot three nights in a row. You know, so I don't know. I think there is going to be some improvement in that way. But in order – we want that big bat, and you want that big bullpen piece, and you want those things that everybody else is going to want as well. Does this team maybe just not need a shakeup here or there? You know, that was with the in the Alan Craig trade to get Tavares into the lineup. That was more of a, hey, let's trade, let's go get Lackey, let's get some of these guys, but let's also shake up the culture a little bit. You know, I feel like that may be what happens. And if you would have asked me last week, even with Wong playing well, I almost thought that there may be a situation, and this may happen, to where they go and get a shortstop and ultimately start making that move to maybe DS somewhere else. But after reading some things this week, I think he may be in their long-term plans until Perez is ready. You know, I don't know. A lot of that can change. But I do think that they're going to improve in areas. Like I said, I can guarantee you they're going to get pitching at the deadline. I think that's going to help them out. I think they're going to have to improve defensively in places. Sometimes that's going and getting a veteran that can help you out somewhere. You know, that's a Zobrist could really help this team. You know, I understand that's he's a Cub, and that's long-term. I don't mean that, but like when he was on the market, I really wanted them to bring him in. Somebody like that's going to help the club, and I'm wondering if you can get a guy to help at several different positions. I don't know. I think to answer the question, yes, I think they're about a .500 ball club. High end, I thought they could really catch fire, and if all things would work together, if Fowler, Diaz, Carpenter got on at the clip they were, and if Piscotty improved from where he was last year, I thought this offense would score a lot of runs. I also thought that a year under everybody's belt, they'd be better defensively. None of those things have happened. I think they will happen. I'm pretty optimistic. If you look at, you know, career tier, those things could. I think they're still going to be in the playoff hunt. I think they're going to be in the hunt late enough to where they can make additions to improve the ball club to make a playoff run.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and shift into the important questions, which are the baseball Cardinal, the Cardinal Star Wars mashup type questions that we got on Twitter. Let's do that to wrap us up here, see if we can do them kind of quickly as time is getting away from us again. But Adam Felder Adam M. Felder on Twitter had two questions for us. One, if Mike Matheny was given control of the Death Star, would he deploy it against a squadron of small one-man fighters? We would feel like Matheny would do more like the Rogue One, you know, partial fire of the Death Star, and not, you know, go full throttle, blowing up complete planets, just taking out chunks of them. It just kind of fits with the philosophy of, you know, small ball that he tends to apply at times.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the Death Star would look like under Mike Matheny. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. That's it's tough to even think of those two in the same universe. To me, you know, I don't know. I don't know a good answer to that question. Do you think Mike Matheny's a Star Wars fan? I don't get the feeling he's not.
Yeah, I don't feel like he probably is. I mean,
yeah, I don't either. I think he's a little stiff.
Yeah, feels like it. I mean, and Matheny came up. I mean, Matheny's what? Not that much older than us. What, 2-3 years probably? Isn't he? Like, yeah, 45 or so. And so while he came up in that generation like we did, you know, he was also playing ball through all that time, and at least for a good chunk of growing up, our growing up, Star Wars, while a big phenomenon, did not have that cultural cachet I don't think that it has today. So that the jocks were not spending their time, you know, debating what was going to happen in the next movie or anything of that nature. That's maybe that stereotypical thinking of me, but that's what I feel like is, you know, it was a certain breed of people that spent a lot of time devouring that, and it still probably is. I don't think so. Besides, you know, like you said, Mike does not seem like a guy that, you know, Mike's reading inspirational books and, you know, self-help books, and he's not reading the most recent Star Wars novel.
Yeah.
Adam also had, who would make a better defensive left fielder, Matt Adams or Jack Porkins? I do not remember Porkins. Porkins was the, well, portly man that flew the X-Wing in A New Hope.
Getting
destroyed. Of course, so many lost their lives there is, on that run to the Death Star. You know, Porkins actually though navigated pretty well. You know, yeah, he got shot down eventually, but you know, he hung in there for a while. And if you read his backstory, he was a pretty decent pilot. So you'd like to think he could cover some ground and know where he was going. So you might have to go with Porkins in that regard.
Well, that's their strenuous testing to get into a flight suit. Yeah. So he's, you know, he's had to do physical conditioning before.
That's
so,
right.
I don't know. I don't know if Adams has ever had to face one of those stress tests.
Probably not so much. Mike Wilson, Mr. M.G. Wilson, asks if Matheny would have the team practice bunting the ball into the exhaust port of the Death Star. Again, you know, I feel like to some degree, yeah, Matheny would have been fine with the Rebels because they did play small ball, if you will. I mean, it takes the small X-Wings and, you know, they got the ball in the right spot, you know, laid down the almost a bunt. In the exhaust port, very small area. They had to do it just right. So I think that, yeah, I think that's what he would have been looking for. He was looking for those, you know, those little edges, those little play the rebellion the right way type of things. That makes sense. Alan?
Yes.
Okay.
Make sure it went out. I didn't hear you.
Okay, yeah, just make sure that sounded somewhat reasonable.
Okay.
But if you didn't hear me, then it probably sounded really reasonable. So we'll just move on from that. And then Tara Wellman, my co-host over at Gateway, asked, and you'll find her at Tara Wellman, asked if the Cardinals should ban Star Wars Night forever since it inevitably injures someone. Now, if you don't know, in 2012, the Cardinals had Star Wars Night, which is not the same as Star Wars Day. It isn't. Star Wars Night usually happens in sometime late in July when the Cardinals have the theme night, and you buy the tickets and you get the, so far, T-shirt. I really wish they'd up their game and go to the bobbleheads like a lot of other teams are doing, where they combine the, you know, like Matt Carpenter and an X-Wing or something like that. A lot of other teams are doing that.
But yeah.
It's a different story. 2012 was the first one. I think it was the second pitch of that game that Shelby Miller took a ball off his elbow, was tossed out. It was, you know, had to be removed from the game, and you know, it went downhill quickly from there. Although thankfully, that was only the only start I think that Shelby Miller missed. 2013, that was the game that Yadier Molina went from first to third, slid into third, tore up his thumb. 2014, which I was actually at that game. No, wait. This is I'll move all these forward. It's 13, 14, and 15. 15, I was actually at that game. Matt Holliday re-injured his quad after, I think, on his first at-bat running down the line. Out for, he had just come back from his first injury, got injured, was out for a good chunk of the year. Last year, though, Star Wars night, no injuries. So I'm thinking that trilogy's over. We could keep having Star Wars night. What do you say?
I agree. We could. I don't think there's any way that you can get rid of Star Wars night under any circumstances. And I didn't know if you saw this, but you know, tomorrow night in Atlanta is Star Wars night.
Oh, is it? Is it?
Yeah, so it will be. It'll be interesting to see if anything happens. But no, I do not believe there's a curse. I made the comment that the only ones that got hurt were the ones that denied the validity of the Force. You know, I was kind of mad at Tara for asking that question.
Of course, you know. Then if, it was, you know, Star Wars Day this year that, you know, just 2 nights ago that, or last night that the Cardinals have two injuries. So, maybe there's a little bit more of a connection, but you know, you're going to have to play on May the 4th and no matter what you do. So, that's just the way it is. So, all right, Alan, we've, done our duty again, I think this week. Anything else you want to discuss before we wrap it up?
No, I think we're good. I'm ready for, to see if they can keep playing well, get, when we get back on here, they'll be returning home from a long road trip, and I hope it's good news.
Yep, yep. The Cardinals will play the Braves two more times, tomorrow night and Sunday. Then a three-game set in Miami against a Marlins team that right now is 4 games under 500 after losing to the Mets tonight. That whole NL East is kind of bunched up together right behind Washington, but none of them are playing 500 ball, so you'd like to think the Cardinals could win at least 4 of 6 on this trip, maybe even 5 of 6. They get an off day on Thursday and then come back home and have to face the Cubs and the Red Sox. This homestand is going to be a little bit tougher than the last one. We'll see how that does. But we'll talk about that next time. But for now, I'm Daniel and that's Alan. Good night.
Good night.
Sooner from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!